As a business owner, I think it can be hard. It can be so hard to give up some of that control to people that you hire in your business. And even though you might know that they're amazing at whatever they do, it's still hard because your business is your baby. It's your thing that you've built from the ground up. And it can be hard to start giving some of that away when you start hiring people onto your team. But at some point, you really have to. You have to weigh the benefit, you know, the benefit versus the cost, right, of your time. And as a business owner, if you want to continue to grow the business, you have to let go of some of those other things and know that you've done your best to train them. You've spent the time and invested that time into training them, that they know how to do it, that you have the process document to fall back on as well. And there are times where they're going to still do it their way. They're still going to achieve the outcome that you want. Maybe it's not exactly the way you would do it, but if it still gets the job done, at some point, you have to be okay with that.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. Now, I trust you also enjoyed our most recent interviews with Zach Marino of Squadcast and Claudette Rowley of Cultural Brilliance. Today on the InnovaBuzz podcast, I'm really excited to welcome as my guest, Kayla Sloan. She's a business systems consultant that helps entrepreneurs systemize their businesses so that they can grow that business beyond what they thought was possible. Kayla's experience working behind the scenes as a virtual assistant with multiple six-figure entrepreneurs helped her see how business owners struggle with systems and outsourcing, and this ignited her passion and inspired her new program, Six Figure Systems, which helps entrepreneurs set up systems to streamline their business. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP for very important person just like you. So go check it out. It's free to join. And if you're a member already, just log in to get your resources. In our discussion today, Kayla talked to me about how to go from self-employed to a business owner with systems. She told us how connecting your systems and processes to the purpose of the business is really important so that everyone knows why they are doing whatever the system or process is. And she told us how she builds process templates in her project management system. And that's a really great way for us all to implement them within our normal work processes. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Kayla Sloan. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from Lincoln, Nebraska in the USA, Kayla Sloan, who's a business systems consultant that helps entrepreneurs systemize their business so it can grow beyond what they thought was possible. Welcome to the podcast, Kayla. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Letitia Stiles, who was my guest on episode 171 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you. So a big hello to Letitia.
Yes, definitely. Letitia's a longtime friend and she's a brilliant businesswoman for sure.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun talking to her about all things marketing. So hello to Letitia. Now, one of your products, Kayla, is the Six Figure Systems Makeover Program. And I know you are a big fan of systems as the fundamental platform for building and growing a business. And as a systems junkie myself, I'm really looking forward to exploring that topic in a lot more detail today and digging into systems and processes. But before we start talking about all those things, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
All right. Well, I'm going to give you the quick version because, you know, this could take the whole episode if we wanted it to. But I started working as a virtual assistant, actually, for business owners about 5 years ago. And in that time, I realized that a lot of business owners who needed help actually needed more than just a virtual assistant to do basic tasks. They also really needed help on a higher level with creating systems and processes. And since I'm naturally a very organized and systematized person, that's just how my brain works, it made a lot of sense for me to kind of step into that role. So with a lot of my long-term done-for-you clients, I really moved from a virtual assistant role into more of a consultant role where I helped them build out those processes and systems and then connected them with a virtual assistant to fill those exact things they needed done.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. I like the way you've pivoted that. And I know I've come across a lot of businesses that have looked to scale and have decided that they'll get virtual assistant or some virtual assistants to help them scale that so that they can get more accomplished, and then they get frustrated very early on because things don't work, and there's a natural tendency to then blame the virtual assistant and say, you know, the person wasn't a good match or they didn't understand what I wanted done. And I always ask them, well, do you have well-documented systems? So that's, to me, that is always the first place where things break down.
I'm so glad you asked that and that you have that point of view, because that's exactly where my brain goes as well. I mean, of course, there's going to be instances where it really isn't a good fit between the business owner and the virtual assistant. That can happen. But a lot of times I think business owners, we don't really place the blame on ourselves. And sometimes we need to, because, you know, it's our job and our duty to have things prepared before we bring someone on board. And so having your systems and processes before you hire a virtual assistant is super important. But at the same time, I know as a business owner, if we're already at that point where we're feeling overwhelmed and we need help, it's hard to step back and say, okay, instead of hiring someone today because I need help desperately, I need to set up these systems. And they think that that just is overwhelming to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've covered a little bit about the why of systems. So what do you recommend as an approach to somebody that perhaps doesn't have those systems in place, and where should they get started and how do they go about it?
Yeah. So again, I know that this can seem overwhelming to try and come up with systems and processes for everything, all the moving parts in your business. So what I always suggest to business owners is that they start with one thing at a time. Of course, like anything else, you eat an elephant one bite at a time, but start with the one that causes you the most stress or the most friction, or the one that you hate the most and always procrastinate about, and do that one first and work through it step by step. Go through all the motions yourself and keep track of everything that you're doing from the very first step of opening your browser and going to a specific website, like literally every step of the process, so that it's easy, it's A to Z, so that someone brand new who has no familiarity with this can step in and do it. And that's really how you start to create your systems and processes so that they're easy to understand when you get ready to hire someone.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. So start with the thing that causes you the most pain. Where I, well, I mean, I've always been really systematic and always loved checklists and so on. But one of the things I learned very early on in business, and I guess I was doing this before anyway, was the things that I did occasionally so that they weren't in my memory how to do them. Mm-hmm. And then the second and third time I'd go to do that one, oh, now how did I do that again? Now what's the next step? Now what do I have to watch out for here? And I thought, this wastes so much time, because every time I've got to go find the information on the internet or wherever it might be. And so I thought, just write it down as a bullet checklist with links to the appropriate support documentation, and there we go. And then after that, you don't have to give it any thought.
Exactly. And that's exactly the right way to approach it. So if you can do that, if you're a business owner and you're just starting out and you could do that from the beginning, you're going to save yourself a lot of headache and hassle in the long run. If you're a business owner and you already have the headache and the hassle, I know it seems difficult, but take that step back and really put a little bit of time and effort into doing those things, and it's going to pay off so much in the long run.
So what do you suggest as the system for keeping track of all this stuff? So do you have suggested, so Google Docs, or it's probably not that important, but is there something that in your experience works better than other things for businesses?
Yeah, so now we're talking about the system to keep track of systems.
Yeah, that's it. The system for systems.
Exactly. I do actually use Google Drive and Google Docs because I find that it's easy to keep everything organized into little folders and control what you share with team members, with external people, you know, whomever that you need to be sharing these things with. So it gives you a lot of control. I think it's really easy. A lot of people intuitively can figure out how to use Google Drive. So I think that's just a really simple way to do that. But going hand in hand with that, I also recommend to business owners to get on some sort of task management system if they're not already. So something like Asana or Trello or Monday, all of those can be really great tools for communication and also storing information so that you don't have to rely on your email inbox for communication with your team members. And it just keeps everything nice and neat in one place versus trying to use something like a chat app and email and Google Drive, right? So just keeping everything all in one place so it's streamlined.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. And Google Drive, like you say, it's really, I think its strength is in the sharing options that you have, and also the folder structure is really good, because if you're going to build a system for systems, then it's good to keep it really systematic. And of course, you've got the search option.
Yes, that's very helpful too.
So how do you go about, you mentioned a couple of, I would probably call them more project management tools like Asana and Trello and Monday. How do you go about transferring a system or a process into those tools when it becomes a project, say?
Yeah.
Or take a project that is a sequence of processes and bring those into the project management tool, which is probably where it's best to manage the projects, right?
Exactly. So I personally use Asana, so I'll probably talk about that one the most, but I have used some of the others as well. They all have pros and cons and different, you know, styles to work with your business and whatever method you decide to go with. But for me, I use Asana because you can do it as a checklist or you can do it as a board. So like Trello has the board feature, Asana has that as well. So it's really nice that it can be so versatile for users, which is why I prefer Asana. It's also really robust for a free tool too. But anyway, I'm getting off track, but I'm definitely an Asana lover. But as far as structuring things in there, I have a project in Asana called Operations Manual. And so that's where I keep all of my systems and processes in one place so that my team knows exactly where to go to find the exact information that they need. And then we have other projects for things we're working on, such as, you know, my consulting program. We have a project for that. My course that teaches people how to become a virtual assistant. We have a project for that. And inside of there, for all of our recurring things, we have template tasks. So we have a task set up that literally says template at the beginning of the name of the task. So we can duplicate that, and it basically just acts as a checklist every time we go through the same process over and over again. So for instance, if you create, let's say blog content for your website, you can set up a template task for every blog post so that every blog post has, you know, someone creates the draft. It goes through the editing process. You find graphics to go with the blog post content. You upload it to WordPress or whatever, you know, your website is on. So really, I know that sounds kind of like tedious, but after you get them set up the first time, you can just use them over and over again into the future. And it really becomes a time saver in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That's pretty much what we do in terms of the template bit. In fact, we use, you know, square brackets template in front of thing and then just duplicate that in Asana. I've got a love-hate relationship with Asana, but you're right, it is, for a free tool at the high level, it is very robust. So, yeah, and then you can copy that. What we don't do is have the operational manual inside Asana. That's why I was kind of curious how you went about connecting the two things. In terms of the steps of a particular process or system, how much detail do you go into then?
I try to go into as much detail as possible. And sometimes people may look at it and think it's even a little bit overkill, but I'll tell you, putting all those details in really saves you in the long run, because even something as simple as, you know, the first step is to open your browser and go to, you know, xyzwebsite.com is going to be, that seems like a no-brainer, right? Like, duh, that's how you do it. But if you don't put it in there and you have someone brand new, you're going to have questions. And it seems like every time I go through, you know, hiring a new team member or training someone on a new process, they always have questions too. And then we can incorporate those into the process so that it's even better for the next time. So they're just an ever-evolving working set of documents.
Yeah, that's a great point. That it's not something that's documented once and put away and maybe referred to regularly. It's certainly a living, dynamic document.
Yeah, and I've done too. I think I've done a fairly good job. You know, not to pat myself on the back, but of you know empowering you know the people that I work with in my business to have some ownership of that too, so that if they're working through the process document and they notice something is missing or something has changed, because we all know online tools are changing all the time, that we go ahead and update it right then and there. We don't put it off. We don't come back to it later. We do it right then so that it stays up to date for everyone else on the team too.
Well, that raises a question that I think is a really important one as well. Who's in the best position to write the process or the system?
Yeah. If you don't have any team members and it's just you on your own, then clearly it's going to be you writing the process documents. But after you start having people on your team and creating, you know, essentially more of a small business rather than just being a solopreneur, really, I think it's whoever is doing that task regularly should either be in charge of creating or keeping up to date the documents that they use for their job.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because one of the other questions I've got that we'll touch on a little bit is getting people to follow the systems. What do you do to motivate people to follow the system if you're a business owner and you have a team of people? Because one of the things that I've heard a lot, and this used to happen in the corporate world when I was working there and we had systems. I used to be very strong on putting systems and processes in place, and the struggle there was often that people would say, I've got this system, but nobody actually follows it. So I think getting the person whose job it actually is to run that system or to do that process or project, that they write it as they do it and then continually improve it based on new things that are happening or improvements that they recognize as they're working through the process is actually a really good way to get them to take ownership.
Yeah, I think having them take ownership is absolutely key, because if people don't have ownership, they just assume someone else is doing it. So just making it super clear whose job it is and making sure that, you know, they're accepting that responsibility as well. And sometimes that just comes back to having the right people in your business too. You know, making sure that the people you choose to have on your team are invested in your success and the success of the business. I shouldn't say your success, but the success of the business, and you're really creating that team atmosphere so that everyone understands exactly what the purpose is of everything they're doing. And even like taking the time as a business owner to tell them what the long-term vision is of the business and what is the goal we're trying to accomplish and why, and how do these tasks fit into that? Because if you have multiple people on your team as your business grows, people can start to feel a little disconnected. And I find that that's when they get a little bit sloppier. They get a little bit less, you know, they take less ownership. They're not as involved. They don't really have that, you know, that feeling of understanding why they're doing what they're doing and why it's so important that it's done according to the process, right? So just making sure they stay invested.
Yeah, well, there's so much in that. There's you've really touched on a lot of things that are really, I think, core to this, the success of doing this really well. And that's how, you know, having people on board that understand the purpose and the vision of the business, making sure that every task, every system, every process is actually somehow connected to that vision and purpose, or to a goal that's connected to that vision and purpose, and making sure that everybody understands that. So, and then, you know, we like to start our every single process, and sometimes you feel like, as you said before, it's a little bit of overkill if it's something really simple, but we like to start it with why are we doing this and what's the outcome we're going to get, and then looking at connecting that back. So that's always where we start ours. So
I think that's brilliant. Mm,
do you have kind of a master structure for how you write up your processes in that sort of way?
I do. I typically start with an explanation of how things fit into the business as well. So I think that's a really smart idea, because that's kind of how I do it too. I think that's important, because as much as you tell them verbally, or if you have team meetings and you talk about it there, that's one thing. But when they're going through the process on their own time, working on things, you know, on their own, especially with a virtual team, just making sure that it's always clear and they always understand exactly how it's fitting in, right? So having that right there at the top before you even dive into how to do something is really important. And then I've also just done, I've just tried to break my process documents up into sections with bookmarks and links so that it doesn't get as overwhelming, and they can easily jump to certain sections by having like a miniature table of contents at the top too. I know that sounds really, I'm getting into the logistics there a lot, but if they get really detailed, that can be super important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And do you use lots of screenshots or even video in the documentation?
I do, because I find that people learn in different ways. Some people like to read the written process. Some people like to see the screenshot as an example, especially if it's something kind of technical. And others like to watch video. So I try to kind of provide multiple options for people so that they can learn the best way that works for them.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. I had somebody tell me a little while ago, actually it's probably near the beginning of my business, and it was just a throwaway comment in a presentation, but I followed up on it and I've been doing that since. And the comment was along the lines of, just video yourself doing whatever it is you're doing and then hand that video to another person. So in this case, in our discussion, the virtual assistant, and say, okay, this is how we do this process, and can you now write this up and then do it the way I've done it on this video, and then feedback to me where you didn't understand something, because that's where we need to elaborate the documentation a bit more. So that's essentially how we approach it here, and we have a rule in the business that says that, you know, every week we really should be doing 5 videos of something we're doing, just recording ourselves doing it, saying here's how we do it. So here's how I start a podcast session and open up the browser. And that's a really good example of getting into detail, because the system we're using now only works on Chrome browser. So, you know, step one is open up Chrome browser, don't use something else.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really smart, because you're actually getting through that process of finding any gaps a lot sooner by having someone else review the video, do the process, and fill in the gaps. So that's really smart. I may actually take that tip from you and use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier that, you know, inevitably when you sort of do version one of the process, there's questions that people come up with. And even when you introduce new people to that process, that they often come up with questions. And so there's something else that you can incorporate into the documentation that, you know, you hadn't thought of, or the other team members hadn't thought of as questions. Because once you become familiar with a process, I mean, it's with anything, once you become familiar with something, you overlook, or you make assumptions, you overlook the obvious questions somebody who's totally new and a total stranger to that would have.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so even doing it with your method, I'm sure there are still times where you have to update them if things change or if there are additional questions in the future. You know, whenever you bring someone new on is where you always find those little holes. And it seems like we're just always continually updating them all the time, which I also set a reminder to myself and to my team members who are responsible for keeping documents up to date to do that. So I have a recurring task in Asana for each of us to go through and make sure that the processes we're responsible for are up to date, because there are times too, just like you said, you get familiar with it and then you forget to you know, review it or make sure it still is up to date, or maybe you don't even open it anymore if it's a task you do every day. So again, just, you know, making those changes right then and there and having those reminders to do so.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, because one of the things that we do with our processes is have an executive summary at the beginning. And the executive summary is kind of what we follow, what those people who are really familiar with the process follow. So it's really just a checklist. Have you done this? Have you, you know, have you saved? Have you uploaded? Have you kind of sent the follow-up email and those sort of things? So it doesn't outline exactly what needs to happen in each of those kind of milestones, if you like. It just is a checklist to make sure all that's happened. So it's that's a really good suggestion to go back, because the detailed documentation probably doesn't get looked at a lot by those people that are the expert in the system.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I use Asana as well. So the template task has subtasks, and that's kind of the checklist, like you are talking about in your executive summary. And then in the template task description, so at the top, I also link directly to the Google Doc that has the full outline, you know, the full description of everything to do step by step, and has the video and all of that. So, so it's always easy to for everyone to get to if they need to.
Okay. Yeah, I like that outline using Asana combined with the Google Docs to connect the two.
Is then they have to check it off, like physically check off each one of those subtasks in Asana. And I find that serves as another good reminder versus just seeing like a bulleted list in a Google Doc and like mentally checking it off. Of course, that's good. Yeah. It's better than nothing, but having to check it off is a good reminder.
Yeah, there is a danger of overlooking things if you don't have to physically check it off like you suggest. And I've done that. I kind of read through the bullet list and thought, yeah, well, I've done everything, and then I didn't do one step. I just overlooked it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're ticking it off, it's obvious there's one that's not ticked off. All right. Now,
I'm
curious, where does automation play into all of this with your systems? So I know you wrote I was reading something this morning. I don't know whether it was from you or whether it was somewhere else, but talking about, you know, building automations and saving time with things like Zapier.
Yeah, I definitely try to automate as much as I can too. I mean, building a team is great. And obviously, as a business owner, having a team is going to become essential at some point if you want to continue to grow your business. But there are also things you can automate and set up to just work automatically to save time for yourself and for your team. And it can also be a good money saver as well if some of those things can be automated. Zapier is one of my favorite tools for sure for automation. They have so many integrations that you can use to automate things.
Yeah. So what's an example of something that you might have automated with, say, Zapier?
Sure. So there's some automation set up where if someone fills out a survey form or fills out the contact form on my website, then they're automatically added into my email marketing software, because they have to check a box that says it's okay for us to contact them, of course, to be legal and all of that. But that's something that we have automatically set up so that they're enrolled in our email newsletter specifically for whatever they are reaching out about. We also use it to make sure that anyone who purchases our product automatically gets enrolled again in the email updates for that product, so that if something is updated, they are notified about that. So, you know, those are things that, you know, all businesses do. I'm sure as consumers, we've seen that happen when we buy a product, we get email product updates, right? But, you know, using Zapier to set that up to connect the two systems together is a huge time saver versus doing it manually.
Mm. Yeah, and how important is it to have the system written out, and do you kind of manually go through a process before you set it up in one of those tools to automate it?
I usually do, because, you know, technology and automation is great, but there's going to be times where it fails, right? So if it does, you need to know how to handle it manually if there is something you're going to have to do yourself.
Yeah, and also that's a great point, because if something's broken, and I've had this happen to me before, something broke in the chain of events that Zapier was running, and it took me ages to figure out where the break was in the chain, because we hadn't actually written up that as a process.
Mm-hmm. And I do keep track of what it's supposed to do. So I do two things. So when I create the automation, I keep track of what exactly the automation is supposed to do and what the purpose is, so that we have it written down somewhere. Because if it breaks and you have to recreate it, or, you know, fix it or delete it and start over, or whatever that may be, you need to know how to recreate it to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. But then I also have a manual process created as well, so that it's like, if it fails and we have to do it manually in the meantime while we work to get it fixed, here's how we do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I'll need to add that to our list of things to do to be more disciplined around that, because we have quite a few of those automated processes. In fact, sometimes when we switch from one tool to another tool and all of a sudden there's something happening, often it's social media things being posted and it happens and I go, what's triggered that? Where did that come from? And, you know, so if we have to turn something off, keeping track of that actually should be part of your overall processes. And I realized talking to you that in our case, it's probably not.
Yeah, I definitely think it's helpful. It's saved me a few times from having to spend hours doing something, you know, figuring it out again later because I had it written down. So that was super helpful. One of the other really popular integrations I use is that Zapier will integrate with Asana so that I can have tasks automatically created for things as well. Like when someone fills out our contact form, not only are they added to our email software, but they also are added to Asana. So we make sure that that email gets dealt with and we answer whatever question they have, or, you know, take whatever necessary action. So.
That's great. And it can go directly to the person who is responsible for that particular area.
Yep. It's very helpful for sure.
All right. Now, I know, you know, you mentioned that your background was working as a virtual assistant. And one of the things I'm interested in kind of hearing your thoughts on is working with a virtual team, particularly if it's located in different countries, different locations where people are not in the same office. What are some of the challenges there and how do you address those? And particularly around, you know, having robust systems and processes in place that everybody follows.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Working with a virtual team, if you've never done it before, can be difficult in the beginning as you really figure out exactly how you can work together and make sure that everything gets accomplished and that everyone stays on the same page as far as communication. I find that communication is probably the biggest downfall to having a virtual team if you don't have any experience with it already. But that doesn't mean you can't work through it. I have worked with people, I'm in the US, so I've worked with people in the US, I've worked with people in Canada, but I've also worked with people over in Europe, in London specifically. I've worked with people in Asia too. So there's definitely different time zones and you can make it work, but you just have to be more diligent about communication and making that a priority, especially with time zones. That can be a challenge, I know, because like for me right now, it's 6:33 p.m. I'm not sure what time it is for you, but I know we're definitely on different time zones.
Got, 9:30 in the morning, the next day.
Yeah. So it's Tuesday for me and it's already Wednesday for you. So
that's right.
Yes. But I think it can be done. And so some of these communication tools that are digital make that a lot easier too. So you don't have to have that face-to-face communication and meet at times that are really weird for either person.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think systems and processes are actually a magic tool there in that, because you can, as you say, communication is really important. And I think the whole culture of communication is important there. I mean, if you take it, chunk it up and just say, well, you know, what do you do if you're in an office environment and there's a team there that works together in the same office? They see each other every day, and everybody has their own job to do. But if there's a question, somebody just walks over to the other person's desk, asks the question, they get an answer, and it's done. So essentially, you've got to try to recreate that kind of environment in a virtual situation. And like you say, there are some challenges around distance, location, time zones, and perhaps even language and culture. But I think the systems and processes really actually give you something that takes a lot of the mundane communications off, and then you can build on the adding value type communications later on. Mm. So you can kind of tell people, well, you know, we need to do this for this customer, and we'll just run this process because it's one of these projects, and then mm-hmm. you can have the conversations around adding value. You know, how can we delight the right. customer now? What can we learn from this experience that we can then improve what we do for the next time?
Yes, having the systems in place cuts down on the number of back and forth questions that you need to ask each other, because they should all be answered already in the process document. And if they're not, then they need to be, right? That's where it comes into play, that mm-hmm. you need to keep them up to date. The other thing I've noticed too with virtual communication is that you do need to build some time into your processes. So if you've never worked with a virtual team before and you end up working with people who are on different time zones than you, make sure you build that into your deadlines and the expectations for yourself or for your clients, or, you know, whatever type of business it is that you have. But make sure you have a plan for that, because it needs to be realistic for everyone to get their things done on time and to meet the deadline, but you don't want to set unrealistic expectations.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really great advice. One of the things I hear a lot, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that, or how you'd respond to that. I mean, I think I know your thoughts on it, but how would you respond to that? And it's when suggesting to somebody, well, you know, outsource that task to a virtual assistant, because you're not really the person that should be doing that. You've got, you know, you've got higher value things to be doing in the business as the business owner. And so they get somebody on board to help do that. And then the response is, well, I could have done that much quicker myself, and I probably would have done it better as well.
I have heard that one for sure. typically my answer is, a few things. You know, I ask a few questions before I just dive into an answer for sure. But usually, you know, I revisit, okay, if they did it wrong, is it because you didn't tell them how to do it, or you didn't tell them how you wanted it to be done, or what your expectation was? Or, you know, is it their first time doing something like that? If you're working with someone who's a new virtual assistant, or even just new to your business and to what your expectations are, you know, give them a chance to do it more than one time before you decide it's not worth it. You know, give them the opportunity to improve upon their efficiency and their productivity level when it comes to that specific type of task, because we all know that we get faster over time. And if it's something you as a business owner have been doing for, you know, months or years, obviously you're used to it. It's very routine for you. It's very quick and easy. But for them, it's brand new.
Hmm. Yeah. And I like to take the approach of, you know, if people are learning something new, first of all, they've got to see it and be shown it. And, you know, we talked earlier about connecting it with the purpose of the business and being clear about what the outcome is and so on. So all of that is really important. But then I figure that, you know, there's a few steps to having somebody do that, something that's new to them. And the first step for me, so if I'm the business owner and it's I know how to do a particular process or system, I will do that and demonstrate it. So they basically see mm-hmm. how I do it. They see, you know, they understand how it fits. They understand the outcome. They see me do it and achieve that outcome. And, you know, I'll make it clear that this is how I do it. It might not necessarily be the best way, but this is how I do it. And this is the result I get. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy with that result. So then I work with the person and we do it together. And that's mm-hmm. where a lot of questions come up then. So we kind of do it mm-hmm. together as kind of a team. Then the third step is I kind of have them do it, but I watch. Mm-hmm. And I just intervene at points where they're stuck or they go off track and give feedback. And then at that point, I have to step back. I have mm-hmm. to say, okay, once I'm satisfied that the other person has understood everything and knows the process at that point, I have to step back and let them do it. And yes. of course I give feedback on the outcomes, and of course I kind of watch and mentor, but that's where the next big learning step takes place, and the person is stretched a little bit. And also it's where the questions then take on a different form. So they're not about, well, what's the next step or how do I do this step? It's about, why couldn't we do this way? Wouldn't that work better? And mm-hmm. those are the sort of questions that then challenge me and often result in improvements to the process.
Yes, I love that. That's exactly what I was going to add, but you did it already. So that's exactly it. Because as a business owner, I think it can be hard. It can be so hard to give up some of that control to people that you hire in your business. And even though you might know that they're amazing at whatever they do, it's still hard because your business is your baby. It's your thing that you've built from the ground up. And it can be hard to start giving some of that away when you start hiring people onto your team. But at some point, you really have to. You have to weigh the benefit, you know, the benefit versus the cost, right, of your time. And as a business owner, if you want to continue to grow the business, you have to let go of some of those other things and know that you've done your best to train them. You've spent the time and invested that time into training them, that they know how to do it, that you have the process document to fall back on as well. And there are times where they're going to still do it their way. They're still going to achieve the outcome that you want. Maybe it's not exactly the way you would do it. But if it still gets the job done, at some point you have to be okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love that you said invest your time in training them and making sure that they're, they have the tools that they need to do that. Because the process I outlined obviously takes a lot longer than just doing the process myself once. But mm-hmm. once I've invested that time, the return is going to be amazing, particularly some of the, you know, more complex processes that we have running, the systems and so on. Once I get to a point of handing that off to somebody else, and then suddenly I have an hour or 2 hours a day at my disposal where I was doing that previously and can now invest that in, you know, developing new products or whatever it might be, that where I add value to the business more than just doing repeat processes. So that's really great. And yeah, there was another thing I was going to follow up on, but I've slipped my mind now. Oh, yeah, that's right. You also said that, people might deviate from the process and still get the result, and that's okay too. And I think that's an important thing, is to have that trust that once people understand how it works, once people understand what the outcome is and the quality standards of the outcome, then, you know, they'll add some level of creativity, and that's often where improvements come up as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that's true. I know we talked earlier about having trouble with, you know, getting people to follow the process. And I think it is important to get them to follow the process in the beginning. But then, like you talked about, innovation comes from that creativity of them coming up with other ideas or better ways to do things down the road after they've become familiar with the process in the first place.
Mm. And it's still important to keep documenting that, though.
Mm-hmm. It is. You're right. Yeah. It is. You don't want to deviate from the process and then all of a sudden the document's so outdated that it doesn't even make sense.
That's right, because there's a couple of things for me there, and that's the next time you add another team member, that person needs to have the documentation to get started with. So first of all these systems and processes, if they're up to date and live, become a training tool for new employees. So they can then come on board and you can grow your team and get people fully contributing very quickly because they have all these resources at their fingertips. And the second thing for me, and I'd like to kind of ask you what your thought around that is, that the better that documented all these systems and processes are, they actually end up being kind of products. So if I have a really well documented system for let's say writing a blog post that ends up with generating a lot of leads, then that's a product that you could,
because
there's lots of businesses that want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's something I actually have been doing myself too, is my Asana setup. I actually have a workshop about that business owners love because they want to set up a project management tool. And they, you know, if they decide to go with Asana, then I have that walkthrough right there. And now I don't have to spend my time answering those questions anymore either because I have my workshop put together.
That's right. You say, well, here's how we do it. So, and this works.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Kayla. This is fabulous. I could talk systems and processes and bits and pieces associated with that all day, but I'm aware of the time. So I think it's time we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's a series of questions designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful short answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Allow space for creativity. So make sure you have time set aside in your day or in your week that's unstructured so that you have room for that creativity.
Hmm. Yeah, great advice. And there seems to be a theme coming through. A lot of people are saying, you know, allow yourself time and unstructured time, go and do something different, get out of the office and so on. So I think it's all related to that, creating that space for creativity. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I just listen when people, I know that sounds so simple, but I just listen when people come to me with their questions, because if you start paying attention to the things you get from your audience, whether you have readers or listeners or, you know, what, whoever's interacting with your business, if you start paying attention to the things that they're asking, then you'll know exactly what you need to work on next and what you need to create and how you can serve those people.
Mm, yeah. Good advice too. And it might sound simple, but if it's obviously not simple to implement, because if it were, everybody would be doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the old common sense isn't all that common. So you've mentioned Asana quite a bit. Is that the resource you use most often, or is there another resource you'd like to mention that you use often?
My favorite tools are Asana and G Suite, so that I can use, you know, Google Docs and Gmail and all of that. Yeah.
All right. And yeah, we've talked in quite a bit of detail as to how you use that. So that's great. Yeah. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
I would say the best way to keep it on track is to make sure that you have set deadlines for every step of the way and that everyone's on board to get everything done on time. So just, again, it comes back to communication and organization.
Mm. And, of course, processes are really good for that.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. All right. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Just be you. That's actually something that I have been really focusing on myself in the last few months, is really just being me in my business rather than trying to emulate other people or be like someone else that you look up to or that is also in your space. The people that are purchasing your products or that want to work with you or that want to be involved in your business are there because of your unique, you know, your unique personality or your unique style of doing things. Almost no idea is actually unique, but the way you present it and the way that you live your life, if you're an entrepreneur and people are attracted to you as a person, that's what's actually going to set you apart.
Hmm. And of course, that does require a fair bit of self-awareness in terms of knowing what it is that people value about you, right?
Mm-hmm. That is true. Again, that really, to me, comes back to that space for thinking, that unstructured time and space and listening to what people tell you, why they're coming to you, why they're buying your product. They'll tell you if you ask or if you listen, and then spending some time with yourself to figure out exactly how you can present that.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for getting us through the buzz. That was great. Now, what's the best place where people can find out more about your service and your programs and also perhaps reach out and say thank you for what you shared with us today?
The best place is going to be on my website at kaylasloan.com.
All right. And we'll put links to that in the show notes as well for people to click through. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and in productivity?
That is a really good question. The number one thing I would tell someone if they want to be better at productivity is to take the time up front to do the work, which is exactly what we've been talking about the whole episode. But honestly, investing some of that time in the very beginning to create these things that will save you so much more time in the long run.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I can certainly vouch for that approach being very valuable. It does give you back a lot of time in the long run. And also, in my experience, then, you know, building a virtual team, as long as you get the culture and, you know, pick the right people, it really makes it very easy to get them all on the same page, all working to a common cause, and gives a lot of clarity to the business.
And it really can make it fun.
Well, yeah. If it's not fun, we shouldn't be doing it.
That's right.
All right. Finally then, Kayla, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
I would say someone great to interview for a future episode is my friend Sarah Allison. She is a social media consultant. And she does a great job of helping people reach their goals through the power of organic social media.
All right. Well, we might get an introduction to Sarah from you and reach out to her and get her on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, because certainly learning more about how to use the power of social media, and particularly in an organic way, to grow your audience is something that we're really interested in. All right. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today so generously, Kayla. This has been wonderful. I've picked up a few tips for improving our own setup and systems, and certainly hope that all the information you've shared is really useful to the audience. So I really look forward to sharing this episode, and I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
All right. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed that fascinating and insightful conversation with Kayla, and like me, learned a heap from what she shared. Now for me, one of the things that I learned was that we need to be better at reviewing our own systems and processes regularly, as well as better documenting the processes that we've set up that are automated, so that if something goes wrong with those automated processes, we can actually track the errors and also replicate that system when we need to, whether that's rebuild it in the automated system or carry it out manually in the meantime until we reset up the automated system. I'd love to know what you took away from Kayla's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Kayla Sloan. That is KaylaSloan, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Kayla Sloan. Now there you'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Kayla, as well as links to her website, her six-figure systems program, and the other resources we spoke about in the conversation. Kayla suggested we interview Sarah Allison, a social media trainer and consultant, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Sarah, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Kayla Sloan. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP, very important person, to access your transformational marketing hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Also, you might like to check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show, which you can find at talesofmarketingtransformation.com, where each episode will provide one valuable little message to guide you on your journey of marketing transformation. And of course, tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Adam Ashton and Adam Jones from the What You Will Learn podcast, and Jonathan Grzybowski of Penji. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.